This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. Negotiators in Qatar say a Gaza ceasefire will begin on Friday morning with aid to follow, quote, as soon as possible. AP correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
Qatari Foreign Ministry spokesman Majid Al Ansari announced the ceasefire will start at 7 a.m. local time on Friday. He said the two sides had exchanged lists of those to be released, and the first group of 13 women and children held by Hamas would be freed by Friday afternoon. He did not say how many Palestinian prisoners would be freed, but officials have said three would be freed for every hostage. Al Jazeera aired Al Ansari's comments, in which, through a translator, he said he was hopeful the truce would lead to more breakthroughs.
A lot of things have been done and said regarding the release of more than the 50 and to extend as well the truce.
He also added that increased aid for Palestinians will start to enter Gaza as soon as possible. I'm Karen Chamas.
Violent clashes have broken out in central Dublin after a five-year-old girl was seriously injured in a knife attack that also saw a woman and two other young children hospitalized. Irish police said the girl was receiving emergency medical treatment in a Dublin hospital following the attack Thursday outside a school. Soon after, at least 100 people took to the streets, some armed with metal bars and covering their faces. Police said over 400 officers, including many in riot gear, were deployed in Dublin city center to contain the unrest, which they said was, quote, caused by a small group of thugs. The World Health Organization says it has made an official request to China for information about a potentially worrying spike in respiratory illnesses and clusters of pneumonia in children. The UN Health Agency cited unspecified media reports and a global infectious disease monitoring service as reporting clusters of undiagnosed pneumonia in children in northern China. For additional stories, visit voanews.com. This is VOA News. The European Union is sending border police reinforcements to Finland over fears that Russia is behind a migrant influx. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
The European Union's border agency says it's sending a significant reinforcement, including patrol cars and additional equipment, as soon as next week to Finland's border with Russia. More than 800 migrants without proper visas and documentation have arrived in Finland so far since August, with more than 700 so far in November. That compares to just a few dozen in September and October. They include people from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Kenya, Morocco, and Somalia. The Kremlin denies that it's behind the surge. I'm Norman Hall.
Officials say the rescue of 41 construction workers who have been trapped for nearly 2 weeks in a collapsed tunnel in northern India ran into another delay during what was described as the final phase of digging to reach them. A spokesperson for the Uttarakhand state government said late Thursday that the drilling machine's platform got destabilized while piercing through rock debris, and technicians needed to fix it before the operation could resume. Officials earlier had hoped to be ready to start bringing the workers out on Thursday, but now it won't be until Friday at the earliest. When the excavation is complete, pipes will be laid as an escape route. Oscar Pistorius could be granted parole after nearly 10 years in prison for killing his girlfriend. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports.
The double amputee Olympic runner was convicted of a charge comparable to third-degree murder for the shooting of Reva Steenkamp multiple times in his home in the pre-dawn hours of Valentine's Day in 2013. He turned 37 this week and has been given a second chance at parole after he was wrongly ruled ineligible at a first hearing in March. Serious offenders in South Africa must serve at least half of their sentence to be eligible for parole, which Pistorius has done. The killing happened when Pistorius was at the height of his fame and just months after he had become the first double amputee to compete at the Olympics. And one of sport's most marketable figures, having overcome the amputation of both of his legs below the knee as a baby to run on specially designed carbon fiber blades. A lawyer for Steenkamp's mother said she will not oppose Pistorius's parole. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
New Zealanders can expect tax cuts, more police on the streets, and less government bureaucracy, according to the three leaders who signed an agreement Friday to form a new government. The coalition deal ended nearly 6 weeks of intense negotiations after New Zealand held a general election on October 14th. The deal will see Christopher Luxon serve as prime minister after his Conservative National Party won 38% of the vote, the largest portion of any party. Luxon thanked New Zealanders for their patience during the negotiations and said each party had made policy compromises to close the deal. For additional stories 24 hours a day, visit voanews.com. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti, Washington. Today is Friday, November 24, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tomorrow, Saturday, is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
The International Day for Commemoration of Elimination of Violence Against Women is important because a lot of women are still victims of this crime.
Over fuel supplies has broken out between Kenya and neighboring Uganda. Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko ends hunger strike, but what's next politically for him? Ghana declares a 46-day visa on arrival program for visitors beginning December 1st, 2023.
We use this period to say everybody can come. We are ready, we are open, and we want to get as many people to visit Ghana over the period and experience the rich cultural heritage and the plethora of events that are lined up during the period.
And a young pilot of Liberian descent landed Thursday in his native Liberia after flying solo from North America to Africa in a single-engine plane. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tomorrow, Saturday, November 25th, is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, according to public opinion research firm Afrobarometer. Gender-based violence, or GBV, ranks as the most important women's right that Africans want their government and society to address. Yet, the group says more than half of Africans believe that women who report such crimes are likely to face criticism, harassment, or shaming from their community. Debusan Malipani is the Lesotho investigator for Afrobarometer. She tells me that commemorating a day to eliminate gender-based violence is important because many African women are still victims of the crime.
The International Day for Commemoration of Elimination of Violence Against Women is important because a lot of women are still victims of this crime. You will remember that during the height of COVID pandemic, even President Ramaphosa called it another pandemic in his country. But that is what most of the African women seem to be suffering. And it's almost like we are at war with the rate at which women suffer violence, mostly at the hands of their partners. So it is important that Afrobarometer shares the results of the survey on this important issue on this day. We can see that on average, among 39 countries, almost 4 in 10 say that GBV is common in their community. This is the African average, but other countries, the figures are much higher than that, particularly the Southern African countries. This figure is much higher. And also, Africans say that GBV is one of the most important women rights issues which has to be tackled.
Debusan, I know that Afrobarometer is trying to raise awareness about gender-based violence in Africa. What do you see as some of the impediments to fighting gender-based violence in Africa?
There are still barriers, particularly from society, where nearly half of the Africans will say that this should not be treated as a criminal issue. It should be treated as a private issue. So there are these barriers which have to be tackled towards dealing effectively with GBV. And the other thing is that women are still concerned that if they report this to the authorities, they are likely to be criticized or harassed. About 52%, half of Africans feel this way, that they will be harassed or shamed by others. So it makes it difficult for this to be dealt with effectively. So I really am glad that Afrobarometer is shining this light on this matter, because it's really, really a serious issue which women, particularly African women, suffer. Like, they feel helpless in dealing with this effectively.
Debusan Malipani is the Afrobarometer National Investigator for Lesotho. She was speaking with us from South Africa. For decades, Kenya has imported oil and sold it to its East African neighbors, but Kenya's role as the main gateway for supplying fuel to the region is now at risk. A row over fuel supplies has developed between Kenya and its landlocked neighbor, Uganda. Ugandan parliament approved a decision to put a stop to this after Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni accused Kenyan middlemen of inflating oil prices by up to 58%, causing a huge loss for his country. To find out more about this bitter row, VOA's Douglas Ompuga reached political analyst David Monda.
I think it's a precautionary challenge from the Uganda government, from President Museveni, because there is a feeling in Kampala that Kenyan oil marketers or middlemen are actually adding excess fees onto oil imported from Mombasa to Uganda. I think it's very much a warning shot that Uganda has alternatives. They can bring oil in from Tanzania. But I think more broadly, Uganda is still very dependent on Kenya for all its oil. It's the shortest route for its imports and for its oil. So I think this is more of a diplomatic statement to say that Kenya, you need to get your act in order. Otherwise, we'll start looking for other alternatives. And I think we see this with the construction of the pipeline actually from Hima in Uganda to Tanzania. You know, Uganda has also been looking for other alternatives.
Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga seems to agree with the Ugandan view, accusing the government officials of being involved. Is that a serious accusation?
This is a good question, and it's a question Kenyans have been asking. It's difficult to know one way or the other, because without evidence, it's difficult to make a very clear accusation or conclusion. But what I would say, being an observer of Kenya for a while, is we've had a history of these corrupt deals, not only on the imports of oil, but of sugar, whether it's rice. You have a lot of middlemen, a lot of cartels that get engaged with the government and actually get engaged with this corruption. And with this case, I think what President Museveni was saying and what former Prime Minister Odinga is saying, I actually think makes a lot of sense. And it really needs to be looked into, because at this point, we have a court case where a big trawler, oil container, has been held up at the port because a Kenyan lady, businesswoman, claims that whole oil import from Saudi Arabia coming into Kenya is hers. Yet the government is saying it's not. So it really seems there's a lot of hanky-panky, so to speak, kind of corrupt dealings there, because this is not the first time we've had this kind of problem of government officials not being able to answer questions and very shadowy individuals coming out from nowhere to claim imports and to claim proceeds from products that are imported. So I think this is a deeper question of systemic corruption in Kenya. So I think President Museveni and Raila Odinga are very wise to actually raise the flag on this, and I hope investigations are done. And whoever is culpable is brought to book, because this is unfortunate that public funds appear to be being wasted in this way.
David Monda is a political analyst and professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke with viewers Douglas Mpuga from New York. The CEO of the Ghana Tourism Authority says his country is open to all visitors, particularly Africans in the diaspora. This after Ghana declared a 46-day visa on arrival program for visitors beginning December 1, 2023 to January 15, 2023. CEO Akwasi Ajema tells me the visa on arrival program removes a bottleneck that visitors have been complaining about.
Over the last few years, we've opened up our engagement with the African diaspora through the year of return and beyond the return. And one of the cardinal pillars of this project is what we call Experience Ghana. And every December period, during the festive season, we open up borders to the global African family to come to Ghana, have fun, network, engage, and really be part of what is one big African public gathering. And we've also realized that as more people are coming, as the peak period approaches, the issue of visa becomes cardinal to the discussion. How can we make the diaspora pathways to Ghana much easier? And so this visa on arrival really removes one bottleneck that people have been complaining about. So we use this period to say everybody can come, we are ready, we are open, and we want to get as many people to visit Ghana over the period and experience the rich cultural heritage and the plethora of events that are lined up during the period.
I have passed through your country on two or three different occasions, and every time we were about to land in your country, we had to fill out these forms. Does this mean now this directive is gone, or what is it that if I'm coming to Ghana, what do I need now?
All you need is your passport and a ticket. You come in at the airport, you are granted a visa. The form itself was abolished about 6 months ago, so even now, before the visa on arrival takes effect, when you're coming to Ghana, you don't fill any form. You just present your passport at the desk, and the immigration officer will let you in using your biometrics.
A number of African countries have already announced no visas for Africans. Is this what Ghana is driving at?
Yes, we are on that road. We will get there. I mean, for now, we see it as baby steps. The first step is to grant the visa on arrival. We are working on an e-visa platform. Already within the West Africa sub-region, you don't need a visa to come to Ghana. So that is taken care of. But our end goal in a few years' time, hopefully, will be to have a free visa regime. But to do that, we need to build the systems, the platforms that can check who is coming in. We look at the global database of people with dubious characters and other things. So that system is being built. But as that system is being built and the processes are ongoing, we felt the need that we need to ease the pathways. We are not saying that you don't need a visa to come into Ghana now. All we are saying is that you can get a visa when you arrive. Nobody will stop you. You get to Accra.
Will I still pay for the visa upon arrival?
Yes, you will pay for the visa on arrival, just as you would have paid if you had applied in Washington. But you know that in Washington, you would have had to mail your passport to the embassy, wait a few days. And so for those who take quick decisions on, I want to travel tomorrow, I want to go to Ghana next week, probably this would not have been possible. You will still pay the visa fee that you would have paid in Washington, but then you don't have to take the visa before you come in here. You don't have to even make any application. You just have to appear in Kotoka, in Accra, and then the visa will be given to you.
Akwasi Ajeman is the CEO of the Ghana Tourism Authority. He was speaking with us from the capital, Accra. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, November 24. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko has ended a hunger strike that he has been on since mid-October, according to the French news agency, the AFP, quoting two party officials who visited Sonko in prison. Nafisa Dia is a member of Sonko's Pastel Party. She tells me the visiting official says Sonko is in good shape and has been eating well.
It is true that Sonko has ended his hunger strike, and the news were given by his visitors, his allies from Lagos. It's a new platform that has been created by some opponents, and they joined their strength around Ousmane Sonko, and they visited him yesterday, and after that they said that he has stopped his hunger strike because he says that over 90% of his goals were achieved through the hunger strike. Some were not yet, but at least more than 90% were achieved. So I can confirm that.
When he said over 90% of his goals are achieved, what are the goals?
Well, he did not give details. You know, he's in prison and he's forbidden to communicate either directly or non-directly. So maybe he didn't give them details, or they couldn't maybe say what he said.
I guess everyone wants to know, how is he feeling? Is he in good shape? You know, because he has been on hunger strike for some time.
They say that he's in good shape, he's eating well now, and he has started to do some, you know, some workout, and because that's something he used to do, to work out. So, and he's feeling good. They say that they saw him in good shape and they were happy after the visit. And he's mentally stronger than before.
So will he remain in the hospital, or, I mean, is he still in government custody? Is he still a prisoner?
Oh, he's not at the hospital. They sent him to prison like over a week ago. He's back to prison. He's in jail now.
Politically now, the deadline is approaching.
Yeah, he has less than 2 weeks to go get some sponsorships. But still, you know, that judiciary, I don't know how to call it, but that judiciary thing is still going on. We are waiting for the Supreme Court to issue a paper that could allow us to go to the Court of Dakar to try to have the same decision so that he can gain his sponsors. But, you know, they're taking their time because they're killing the time. But in the meantime, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, we have the Secretary General of the former PASTEF who had the authorization to go get some sponsors, and he did. This week, people have started sponsoring the candidacy of the number two of the former PASTEF. And, you know, it's a wave. Everybody's outside. Everybody's happy. Because even if Sonko maybe is preventing from going and getting the sponsorships he has, at least his number two is able to get them. And that's what's happening now. And still, even if Sonko is given those papers the day before, we still have the sponsorship of the deputies, only 13 of them. And this thing is something that we are reserving for Ousmane Sonko. But in the meantime, some of his lieutenants are able to go and get the people's sponsorship. So that's what we are doing right now. And that person, that number two, he's also in the same prison as Ousmane Sonko. So both are in prison.
Nafisa Dia is a member of Ousmane Sonko's PASTEF party. She was speaking with us from Moncton, Canada. A young pilot of Liberian descent landed on Thursday in his native Liberia after flying solo from North America to Africa in a single-engine plane. 37-year-old Abner Yonle began his solo flight on October 27 in the U.S. state of Maryland. Abner tells me he was overwhelmed by the number of people that came to greet him at the airport.
Arriving in Liberia today was very beautiful. Like, the entire nation came out to greet me, which was a sight I never expected to see, but it was there, and I'm very happy.
You say it felt like the entire nation came out to greet you. I mean, how would you describe the crowds that came out?
I spent a lot of time inside doing interviews, so when I came out, the crowd wasn't there. But, I mean, you can feel that this message went across, and most Liberia was aware of it. And a lot of congratulatory messages came in, and I'm happy about that. I'm not so focused on the crowd being present. I'm focused on the message being, you know, sent across.
And once again, the message you want to send across is what?
The message I want to send across is Liberian, African, we are capable, we are able, and with determination, there's nothing can stop us from doing what we want to do. And yes, that's my message to every youth and everyone who got inspired by this story.
Abner, you know, ever since I ran your interview, I've gotten questions that people say, how old is Abner?
Abner is 37 years old.
Wow. And making a solo flight.
Yes, sir.
Now, describe, where did you come from the last before you entered Liberia?
I came from Freetown, Sierra Leone, Longit Airport, and then flew into Rabat International Airport, did some immigration paperwork, and then flew into James Springs.
The smaller airport in Monrovia.
In Monrovia. Yeah, and then once I got to Springfield, there was a crowd on the at the apron waiting for me, and I was greeted by fellow Liberians, both in and outside the airport. Yeah, I appreciate everyone for showing up. I appreciate everyone's support. I didn't get to meet a lot of people, but thank you all for the support, and thank you all for all you guys do. And let's make Liberia proud.
Well, we have to say thank you very much for the journey, and congratulations once again.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Enjoy your stay in Liberia. When do you hope to leave from there, or are you staying for a while?
I'll be staying for a while right now because the lack of avgas, I need to be able to find aviation fuel in order to be able to make another journey.
And then from there, you are returning to the United States, or you're taking the same route that you took to get to Liberia?
Back from Liberia, go down to Ivory Coast, Ghana, and then stop in Nigeria. So I'm hoping that I can be fulfilled. If not, then this will be my stop.
Well, thank you very much again, and congratulations for the journey, the adventure.
Thank you so much, sir, for hosting me. I appreciate you.
Amna Yonle is a young pilot of Liberian descent. He spoke with us from Liberia's capital, Monrovia. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with football as Africa's premier club football competition, the CAF Champions League, makes a return this week as the group stages of the 2023-2024 edition of the competition officially gets on the way across the continent this Friday. Following an intense preliminary round that saw some interesting outcomes and upsets, it is now down to the 16 clubs that have been grouped into the four groups of four to resume their continental quest for glory. The action officially gets underway in Egypt on Friday when Pyramids welcomes five-time champions TP Mazembe, who are itching for continental success after last lifting the Champions League trophy in 2015. In Tanzania, Simba AC welcomed Ivorian giant ASEC Mimosa in a Group B encounter that promises fireworks on the eastern part of the continent on Saturday afternoon. Later that evening, a Tunisian duel will see ES Tunis playing host to ES Sahel in Tunis, with both sides looking at bringing the trophy back to Tunisia after ES Tunis last did it in 2019. In another exciting encounter up north, it will be Al Hakli who will play host to Ghanaian outfit Madema in Cairo as the competition's record holders look to defend their title. Last season's runners-up, Wydad AC, will be looking to quickly erase their African Football League disappointment when they welcomed the high in confidence Jwaneng Galaxy on Saturday evening, while Mamelodi Sundowns, fresh from their AFL triumph, will face Mauritania's Nodiabo on Sunday afternoon. And now to athletics. A refugee athlete on an International Olympic Committee scholarship to train for the Paris Olympics has been provisionally suspended in a doping case. The Athletics Integrity Unit said Faoud Id Bafdil, who is originally from Morocco, was sent a notice of allegation after testing positive for the banned blood-boosting hormone EPO in October. The 35-year-old runner is provisionally banned from competing while the case is prosecuted just 8 months ahead of the 2024 Summer Games in France, where he now lives. The International Olympic Committee said last December that Id Bafdil was among more than 50 refugee athletes getting financial help in their host countries to prepare for Paris. And now to squash, where no fewer than 128 players are set to slug it out for honors in the Abuja squash competition scheduled for November 27th to December the 2nd. Boye Oyerinde, president of the Nigerian Squash Federation, said that the week-long competition will see a pool of 64 players in both the female and male categories compete for prizes. The squash competition is expected to serve off at the Moshood Abiola National Stadium, Abuja. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malle in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, November 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We will see you again on Monday morning.
Greetings. This is VOA's Sonny Young. brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and VOAAfrica.com. It's the